Welcome back to another episode of Nacho Average Sports.
Yeah, how's it going? It's your main man on the scene, Nacho, giving it to you live with no jive as we thrive in 2019. And, we're coming back for episode 9 with a vengeance. And, we're recording live into Anchor, and as a backup, we're recording into GarageBand just in case, so that if we lose this link, we have archived this episode so that it'll be easy to upload again for your hearing pleasure. And our last episode, 8, took place 3 weeks ago on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And a lot has happened in sports since then. You know, we wanted to try to give you a little Super Bowl preview. We wanted to follow up a week ago, right after the Super Bowl. But, we'll get to that. That Super Bowl was quite bleh, quite hashtag boring. And I totally understand why a lot of people boycotted and didn't even tune in. Shout out to those folks. But we want to start off this episode by giving a shout out to Anchor once again for just leveling up, man. I mean, they've already had a partnership with Spotify. You can hear this show and a lot of other incredible podcasts that are hosted on Anchor and make their way to be streamed on Spotify. But Spotify actually acquired Anchor, I believe, in a new type of business deal that, you know, I guess it's yet to be seen. How much further content will be streamlined from Anchor to Spotify and what have you. But it's definitely an exciting moment, you know, for as a podcaster, man. And I mean, just Anchor, just shout out. You guys just keep doing it. And that's what gives us the motivation to produce more podcasts. So if you're not familiar with the show, Nacho Average Sports, we rekindled our themes and our pillars to the show, if you will, to reflect a recipe of what the show is inspired by culinarily, and that is nachos themselves. So, you know, we always start off each episode with a chip. Who's got a chip on their shoulder? And although this was, you know, weeks ago, and you could probably fill in, you probably have your own ideas of who has chips on their shoulders in sports. But we wanted to give an honorable mention to Manny Pacquiao in his win over Adrian Broner. And, you know, the Pac-Man still has it. He may have had a chip on his shoulder for some of the controversial losses he took in recent years in the ring, but he definitely outboxed Adrian Broner, took the W there. And, you know, you could even say, you could make the argument that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick had chips on their shoulder for being quote unquote the underdog, but you'll never get that concession from me, never. But we jump right into the thick of it, a little curdle here, a little curdle there. Let's get into the cheese, the guap, the gouda, Gruyere's, the blue cheese. You know what I mean? Who's making that young guapo out here? Hey, I gotta let him know, and this is free advertising, but you know, that I've recently, you know, you might have to save your boy Nacho one of these days, because I'm getting sucked into the void of sports betting. But I think hopefully it'll enhance the content of the show with stories from the one and only FanDuel right now. Okay, we're messing around with FanDuel because FanDuel Sportsbook has a location in New Jersey, right near MetLife Stadium. And you know, shout out to Pops, who is a self-proclaimed degenerate gambler, has been my whole life, but it's all to the good. You know, that's where I learned how to shout at the TV and yell at, you know, as I endearingly say about him, yell at everybody in the field of play on either team, okay? We hold no judgment back from the team that we adore versus the team that, you know, we despise, okay? Everyone gets the same level of shit talk, all right? Everyone is open for review and judgment. So, you know, you go to FanDuel though, man, and it's like, it's just a wasteland, you know, and that's that. And I say that with love in my heart for all the cats that are trying to make that extra dollar over there. But really, you know, I had to bring up FanDuel because it was even on the local news. And you have to think that New York as a state sees all the revenue from sports betting that, you know, Jersey right next door is receiving, not only from New Jerseyans, but you had people during, you know, the divisional round of the football playoffs recently in January, you had thousands and thousands of people leaving New York to go to New Jersey intentionally, which is just a sentence you don't often hear on the East Coast. But for the reason to acquire a little more cash or to, you know, make some bets to think they might receive some revenue on their predictions, you know? And great thing about it, you know, I think for sports fans with, you know, all these different sports betting apps, you know, is that, you know, FanDuel, you know, shout out to them because, you know, you hop on the app, but they know they have that jurisdiction and location tracker, and so they know if you're in Jersey or not. But a couple weeks ago, you know, part of this this episode, I'll you know, drop some tidbits of my own anthropological in the field experience as of late. Definitely went to go catch the Golden State Warriors in Washington, D.C. at the end of January. Why? Because I had the time and it was cheaper than it would have been to see the Warriors in Brooklyn, which up until when KD arrived, I was able to afford that. In the last few years, have not been able to see the Warriors at the Barclays because even nosebleed seats were in the triple digits. Whereas take a round trip Greyhound bus and factor in a ticket to DC, to see the Wizards there, and it's cheaper than just going taking the subway to Brooklyn from where I'm at. But the great thing about that trip was, you know, by taking the bus and going through Jersey on the way to DC, I realized, let me pull up my FanDuel app. And let me, you know, it's just crazy all the different options that you have on FanDuel to place bets of, like, anything you can imagine, seriously. The main thing I'm really all about, and I'm like 2 for 2 right now, but of course, you know, I think it's probably best that I don't live in New Jersey because things could go awry pretty fast, but you know, the thing that I like is that you can place bets on who you think is going to make the first basket in any basketball game. Let's say basketball, for instance, right? And so, you know, you have a little, you know, you have my own little idea of intelligence and in terms of, like, game to game. You know, you have to factor in and use all the knowledge at your disposal, right? So I was of the mind that Kevin Durant, you know, being from the DMV, was making his home return. You know, DeMarcus Cousins had just been joined the squad from his injury as a free agent for this year with the Warriors, and the Warriors were looking nice. And so I was of the mind was that as long as DeMarcus Cousins gets that tip off, gives it to Curry. I know Steve Kerr and the team probably acknowledged that, hey, let's try to give KD the first bucket. And then lo and behold, I was correct. Put like $18 on it, maybe one back 117, something like that, and boom, my trip to DC was paid for, theoretically. You know, I mean, I just, as of now, until I hit like a certain threshold, I'm just leaving whatever money I can gain from sports betting in the app itself. Haven't deposited any funds into my account. Maybe that's TMI, but yeah, man, when it comes to making money in guap, like, Jersey is ahead of the curve of New York on this one. FanDuel is making mad chabo, mad dough for the pizza. And, yeah, just something to be aware of. I mean, sports betting, as we know it, is just going to continue to evolve. The NBA as a league, obviously, is looking to partner in more legitimate ways to facilitate gambling of the sport itself. So that's something to look forward to. And yeah, it's just really something. And, you know, so when we think about the Super Bowl, and man, I tell you what, hey, a shout out to everyone who's in solidarity with Colin Kaepernick, those who, you know, hey, boycotted the Super Bowl. You know, I think that there's always room for debate, and a lot of people, I think all of us, you know, live in certain contradictions here and there. I mean, you know, you had certain certain athletes in different sports, you know, let's say from LeBron James and Stephen Curry to, you know, who else? I mean, even activists. You had activists like Angela Davis. You had artists like Jhené Aiko. All of them repping the black Nike Colin Kaepernick jersey that was recently released on the market to show solidarity with Colin. But also at the same time, it wasn't like LeBron James or Stephen Curry didn't watch the Super Bowl. They also publicized the fact that they were watching quite a boring Super Bowl. And if anything, it was, you know, highlighting the fact, an interesting ploy by LeBron to hijack some of the attention that the Super Bowl was getting because it was so boring, and you know him tweeting out, "Where's Woj? Where's the Woj bomb for the next NBA trade update?" But so you know. The reason why, you know, like I just said, you know, when it comes to when you got money on the line, though, you're gonna pay attention. You're invested, literally. And so, and I mean, I don't know. You know, hey, we could go into a whole thing about the Patriots and maybe a government conspiracy post 9/11, but it came full circle with Tom Brady facing the Rams as he did in his first Super Bowl. But I tell you, I get it. Julian Edelman was the target, and he got all the catches. But that defense was behind the mastermind of Belichick was really the MVP. And if anything, you know, and this is my own personal bias, though, because I had $10 on on Stephon Gilmore winning the MVP, and it would have yielded something like $2,300, right? The O'Meal, but... And he had an interception and a forced fumble. You're not going to give Stephon Gilmore as a representative for the defense, the MVP? Of course not, man. Not for nothing, but white privilege. They gave it to Julian Edelman. Yikes. And Patriots live on in glory. Hey, Tom Brady, 6 rings. Yikes. He ties Jordan. GOAT. The guy's just going to keep going, too, for at least another 4 more years, according to him. Unless Giselle has anything to say about that, but... You know, we'll see what happens next year. Hopefully, you know, we had great championship games, but the Super Bowl was definitely boring. And, you know, now there's the NFL draft to look forward to. And, you know, circling back to what the meat of our show was in episode 8, we were talking a lot about, you know, Kyler Murray. And news today is that he will fully commit to football. And so he does not intend to pursue baseball at all, despite having been drafted by the Oakland A's and signing a contract after he was drafted. But, of course, you know, they allowed him to play his 1 year at Oklahoma, and he just had one of the seasons for the ages. So we wish Kyler Murray the best, all his endeavors. Be interesting to see where he goes. Other side note, NFL news is that Kareem Hunt, who was released by the Chiefs this year for a domestic, it wasn't a domestic violence dispute, but there was footage of Kareem Hunt in an altercation with a young woman and several other people in a hotel lobby outside of his hotel room. A lot of context kind of, you know, I don't know, like, you know, some things are still kind of like left in the gray area. Obviously, he was definitely in the wrong. But We don't know what provoked that whole situation. Not that any of his actions were called for, but you had to know, based on, you know, how things go in the NFL that, and in this country, this guy was going to get a second chance. And today the news is that the Cleveland Browns are taking that chance on Kareem Hunt, signing him. So we'll see where the media backlash goes there in Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland, it's just a lot going on in that locker room. So to add this story to that, I mean, I don't know. The Browns always just making boneheaded moves left and right, but they do have an interesting young quarterback in Baker Mayfield. So when it comes to what happens on the field, Cleveland might be in contention next year. So we'll see. But we'll keep an eye on that story moving forward. The main, what do we have here? You know, we have our different topics. So the garnish. Let's go to our little garnish. And inciting the undefeated, we wanted to give a shout out to Jackie Robinson's 100th birthday. His centennial was on January 31st of this year. He was born in 1919. And of course, Jackie Robinson desegregated Major League Baseball on April 15th, 1947. And there's a great article here by the undefeated, which, you know, quotes his daughter and the things that the family kind of usually wanted to do and keep private during his birthday until certain events, you know, took place where Jackie was being honored by Major League Baseball. But I think the main takeaway from this article, you know, a quote from Sharon Robinson, Jackie's daughter, is that when she speaks to kids, and she always focuses on finding their voice, that, you know, it's never been more critical than now. And what's exciting for her is the time period in which women are speaking up and children are speaking against violence that they witness and experience firsthand. And, you know, that she thinks that Robinson would have embraced an athlete like Colin Kaepernick, whose protest during the national anthem began in 2016 and resulted in his banishment. But let's not forget that, you know, in 1968, Robinson went to the defense of American sprinters Tommy Smith and John Carlos in the aftermath of their demonstration in the victory stand during the Mexico City Olympics, when they raised their fist during the national anthem. And, you know, the fact that, you know, he was very involved during the civil rights movement, Jackie Robinson. People forget. You know, he tried to get other athletes involved. The only other athlete that actually came to join him during those times was Floyd Patterson, boxer, who joined him in Birmingham. And Joe Louis also gave him his support from afar. But the article pretty much ends in talking about the necessity for diversity in Major League Baseball. And that diversity has been essential to the growth and prosperity of the sport, and that baseball has established a global footprint precisely because of the process Robinson set in motion more than seven decades ago. You know, Jackie Robinson, Brooklyn Dodgers, the legacy he left behind, that we continue to honor, as baseball fans, as sports fans in general, as, you know, people aware of race relations in this country. And in transitioning from Jackie to another icon who passed away just a few days ago is Frank Robinson. And, you know, we're coming up with, you know, these new topics of interest, if you will, in addition to the ones we've already set up, and you know, it might be a little redundant to use this, description, if you will. But the main dish on the plate is the section that we're transitioning to. But when you think about, you know, the plate is also referred to as the dish in baseball. And man, Frank Robinson was someone who stood over that dish, stood over that plate in a manner that's haunted opposing pitchers. And even if he took a lick, you know, if he was hit by a baseball, he would just, you know, fall down, dust himself off, and get right back up. Probably hit a double or home run right after that. But Frank Robinson is an incredible figure in sports and in baseball in particular, obviously, for his Hall of Fame career. But being a true Renaissance man of baseball, you know, he's the only man to win the MVP award in both leagues, National and American. He started with the Cincinnati Reds, won an MVP in 1961, and then when he was traded to Baltimore his first year in 1966, he won the regular season MVP, the Triple Crown, and took the Orioles to the World Series, where they swept the favorite at that time. They had already moved to Los Angeles, the Dodgers. They swept the Dodgers in four games, and Frank became the World Series MVP. And 28 years after Jackie Robinson had integrated baseball, by this time, Frank Robinson, his career had landed him in Cleveland, where he became a player manager, becoming the first black manager in Major League Baseball history. And his first appearance at the plate as a player manager, he hits a home run to really signify and, you know, just, you know, put a whole poetic justice stamp of approval on, you know, on that moment. And not only was he the first black manager, but he was the first black manager. And again, he was the first and only MVP in both leagues. He's the first black manager in both leagues because he started with the Cleveland Indians, managed there for a few years, took a mini hiatus, and then was hired by the San Francisco Giants of the National League, where he coached for 3 years. An interesting note, though, before he became a major league manager, he got his managing experience by coaching the Santurce winter ball team in Puerto Rico. And it's just interesting because Santurce is just one of those really historic baseball teams in the Puerto Rican League, where Roberto Clemente played and dozens of other incredible, talented players who would, you know, play winter ball and also play Major League Baseball. But Frank Robinson, I think, also notably is someone who hails from the town where I myself have some roots in Oakland, California. And Frank Robinson attended McClymonds High School and played on the same basketball team as Bill Russell, okay? He played on the same basketball team as Bill Russell before Bill Russell went to USF and, of course, later drafted by the Boston Celtics and et cetera, et cetera. But Frank Robinson in baseball at McClymonds, I mean, man, McClymonds High School for sports in the 50s, it was just off the charts. He played in the same outfield as Veda Pinson, who also went on to the major leagues, and Curt Flood, is well documented on this show, is the reason free agency exists in all professional sports, you know, because of what he did to sacrifice his career for, you know, his own welfare, but the greater good of other players, and, you know, basically making it a point that, you know, he was well within his right of self-determinating his career. And although he, like Colin Kaepernick, you know, was essentially blacklisted from the league, and there's no statue of Curt Flood, there's no mention, there's no Curt Flood, fund, you know, there should really be, you know, like a grant or something that honors Curt Flood. I mean, there should be, for every half cent on, you know, for every, I don't even know, cent to the dollar that these professional athletes make, there should be a Curt Flood, you know, honorarium or something that exists for low income, you know, minority athletes. and it just doesn't exist. I mean, we just don't honor Kurt Flood the way we should. But nevertheless, bringing it back to Frank Robinson, I mean, he was always at the center of it all. You know, the fact that he's connected to Bill Russell and Kurt Flood in high school, and then everything he did in his professional career, and the fact, you know, he passed away. I mean, Frank Robinson is just such a legend. In reading, you know, from the Baseball Hall of Fame, actually on his plaque, it talks about how, you know, he was the first to be chosen MVP in both leagues, as we mentioned, but that he also set records by hitting homers in 32 different ballparks with a pair of grand slammers in successive innings in 1970. At the time of his retirement, he was the fourth in home runs with 586, the fifth in extra bases on long hits, sixth in total bases, and on retiring in the National League, his slugging percentage from 60 to 61 to 62 and eight in the American League in batting homers and runs batted in, he just had monstrous numbers. You know, they talk about how they quote Robinson in his Hall of Fame profile about, you know, pitchers did me a favor when they knocked me down. It made me more determined. I wouldn't let that pitcher get me out. They say you can't hit if you're on your back, but I didn't hit on my back. I got up. He was also recognized as one of the most feared base runners of his era, showing reckless abandon on the base paths. He says, quote, "The baselines belong to the runner, and whenever I was running the bases, I always slid hard. I wanted infielders to have that instant hesitation about coming across the bag a second or about standing in there waiting to throw to make a tag. There are only 27 outs in the ball game. It was my job to save one from my team every time I possibly could." He broke into the National League at 20 years old in 1956, and he tied a rookie record with 38 home runs at the time en route to National League Rookie of the Year honors. And over the next decade and a half, he was one of the most feared hitters. Again, the multiple MVPs, the Triple Crown in 66. He was a 12-time All-Star. He won World Series MVP honors in 66 and the All-Star Game MVP award in 1971. He won, you know, championships with Baltimore in both 66 and 70. And not only, as we mentioned, did he manage the Cleveland Indians and Giants, but he also went on to manage the Orioles, Expos, and Nationals, and he was named the American League Manager of the Year in 1989. You know, and when they quote Brooks Robinson of the Baltimore Orioles, they talk about how he solidified that Baltimore club to become a great team and that he could do it all. So our condolences go to the family of Frank Robinson, and what a legend, you know. Look up some archival footage of the man if you're not familiar. And yeah, you know, we're gonna transition now into some contemporary professional basketball news since the trade deadline was last Thursday. You know, the trade frenzy and all the buzz kind of began when Rich Paul, who is Clutch Sports agent for LeBron James, agent for Anthony Davis, you know, they went public with the fact that AD wanted to get shipped out of New Orleans, and that did not happen at the trade deadline, essentially. New Orleans, as a franchise, is going to hold tight and wait to see what they can get for Anthony Davis, most likely this summer, most likely during the NBA draft. But of course, all the rumors of AD going to LA to join LeBron were out there. And then, man, the poor Lakers, man, they were just having leak on leak on leak of all the potential trade packages they were trying to send New Orleans way, and New Orleans is continually rebuffing their offers. So, you know, and something that happened, though, was that when that news of AD, you know, requesting a trade got leaked, you know, AD got fined, you know, And it really, obviously, I assume that Rich Paul, his agent, probably covered the, I think, $30,000 fine, something along those lines. But it's really something of a double standard when, you know, players, again, we come back to this whole notion of, you know, what Kurt Flood stood for, self-determination, and within professional sports. And although, you know, these owners and the teams, they can leak what potential trades they're looking for. If a player does it, then they crack down on the player. They find the player. They bring up this whole notion of tampering. And I just feel like tampering is somewhat of a double standard, somewhat, you know, hypocritical. It's something that protects teams but doesn't protect individual players. But, you know, nevertheless, you know, the saga continues. Who knows? Knicks fans are getting excited just because the potential of maybe having an Anthony Davis or a Kevin Durant or a Kyrie Irving join the team. I just hope that if the Knicks are fortunate to receive a draft pick, a top draft pick, and say land a John Williamson, that they hold on to him, because as is evident in recent weeks, they shipped out Kristaps Porzingis, who was thought to be the future of the franchise, and they sent him packing to Dallas. And now, you know, Dallas out here with the house that Nowitzki built, and having the potential rookie of the year in Luka Doncic. You know, Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis for years to come is going to be a lethal European duo. And the Knicks did the most Knicksian thing, which is they just trade an incredible talent because sources said that he wanted out of town anyway. So they granted his request, and who did they trade him for? They got back Dennis Smith Jr., who, hey, we're not hating on Dennis Smith Jr., but the Knicks had a chance to draft him when Phil Jackson was still, you know, running operations here. And, you know, it's no hating on Frank Ntilikina. The kid just hasn't really evolved, although he's still only, 20 years old maybe, 21 max, from France. Obviously has length, can play good defense, just hasn't really, mastered his jump shot. But it's just to trade Kristaps or any, you know, incredible talent like that we had on our squad, for a guy that we could have drafted 2 years ago is just wow. It's just so near Knicksian. But, you know, there were other trade rumors that were going to take place. Mike Conley stayed put in Memphis, but Memphis did move Marc Gasol to Toronto. Some other small trades here, Portland and Cleveland. Portland received Rodney Hood for in exchange for Nick Stauskas and Wade Baldwin. Interesting acquisition there by the Blazers to try to bolster their lineup heading towards the playoffs. The Detroit Pistons and the Milwaukee Bucks swapped Thon Maker for Stanley Johnson. And then later, I believe that Milwaukee packaged Stanley Johnson. Let's see here. Wasn't it? Yeah, let's see. To New Orleans, I believe so, for Mirotić. Yes, exactly. So, yeah, Milwaukee acquired Nikola Mirotić from New Orleans in exchange for Jason Smith and Stanley Johnson. So Johnson went from Detroit to Milwaukee and eventually New Orleans. The LA Clippers, I think, made the most intriguing trade, though. Of course, the Sixers are just trying to stockpile talent. They got Tobias Harris from the Clippers, but essentially in exchange for draft picks, and Landry Shamet, who I'm really high on Landry Shamet. I think the kid has a great future. But the Clippers made a great trade because when we talk about Anthony Davis, we talk about him going to LA. Let's not forget that Lakers aren't the only team in town. And let's not forget that the logo, Jerry West, who was instrumental in the success of the Warriors when he was a part of the organization, he was the one who basically made it known that if Klay Thompson were to get traded for Kevin Love, he would have had to walk away from his post. And So the team kept Clay. I think that was the best decision that they could have made at that point. And who knows? You know, Clay Thompson is a free agent. Clay Thompson this summer could head to the Clippers if he wanted to. And maybe even go with Kevin Durant. You never know. There's going to be a lot of moving parts that we're excited to see in this upcoming NBA offseason. But the Clippers really, I think, position themselves well with draft picks. If they don't make the playoffs, right now they're the eighth seed, just ahead of the Lakers. The pick that they have from the Boston Celtics will be protected if they don't make the playoffs. But if they make the playoffs, that pick probably won't be as enticing to other teams. Milwaukee, let's see, did they make any other moves? No, we see here the Toronto traded Malachi Richardson. Right, the Knicks had to buy out Enes Kanter. The Wizards traded Otto Porter in exchange for Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker. Interesting little trade there. Iman Shumpert, who we found his game in Sacramento, was shipped to Houston to join CP3 and Harden. So that'll be an interesting little rendezvous there. Poor Harrison Barnes of the Mavericks was traded to the Kings in exchange for Justin Jackson and Zach Randolph, who was eventually let go. But mid-game, and even LeBron James had something to say about that on his social media about, oh, but this is okay, right? It's okay for in basically bringing up that same double standard of, you know, owners and you know, those in charge can make these decisions and still move players on a whim. Even when the player, you know, has no idea of what's going on, that, you know, in game, obviously Harrison Barnes, his allegiance was to the Mavericks. And in that same game, he was traded to another team. But we wish the Senator, HB, the Falcon, the best, coming back to the Bay Area now. And let's see. There's some other moves here. You know, Wesley Matthews was a part of that Dallas trade to the Knicks. He was eventually bought out, and Wesley Matthews, I believe, is going to join the Indiana Pacers to replace the void left by Victor Oladipo. Lakers sent Michael Beasley and Ivica Zubek to the Clippers from Muscala after the Clippers had received Muscala from the Sixers in that same Tobias Harris trade. Philadelphia also sent last year's, or 2017's number one overall pick, Markel Fultz, to the Orlando Magic in exchange for Jonathan Simmons. But, you know, watch out, because Philly is really bolstering that bench, and they looked pretty lethal, you know, albeit the Lakers aren't having a great road trip. They got demolished by 42 in Indiana. Rondo did hit that buzzer beater against the Celtics on Thursday night, but the Sixers look like they have a lot of depth. And although Toronto and Milwaukee are the top two seeds in the East, Philly's really making a run for it. But the team that I like, and they didn't really make a lot of moves in the trade deadline, which I don't think they had to, and it's because they have guys coming back healthy in Caris LeVert and Allen Crabbe, shooters, scorers. And D'Angelo Russell was just named an all-star. Do not sleep on the Brooklyn Nets, I'm telling you. And this is my reasoning. A lot of these teams, besides, say, Milwaukee in the East, looking into next year, have an identity crisis. The Boston Celtics, with everything going on with Kyrie Irving, Toronto, they don't know if Kawhi is going to stay past this year. You know, is it just a rental? Is he going to go to LA? Talking about the Clippers, you know, or the Lakers. Even Philly, the reason why they're stockpiling all this talent is because I think they know that, you know, that the window is now. The Brooklyn Nets, I believe, don't have the same identity crisis as these other teams looking to next year. You know, they can sit pat with the talent that they've already accrued, and they can add another top free agent to that if they make the salary cap space, what have you. I think the Brooklyn Nets are going to make a deep playoff run. They have They have the man at center, the young Jarrett Allen. The kid can really play, and they surround him with ball handlers and shooters. I'm telling you, man, Brooklyn, and we bring it back to FanDuel, man. I put 20 on Brooklyn to make the finals, and let's just say it'll yield back a nice little chunk of change there. So, hey, my own personal reasons, but honestly, you know, and objectively speaking, I think the Nets have really set themselves up well. So we look forward to seeing what happens in the second half of the NBA season, and we're coming up on the All-Star game this weekend, and we'll have another All-Star game special for you following that. We also, you know, it's a storyline that we've been wanting to talk about for years, even before this podcast came on. And last week, you know, actually honoring the birthday of young Trayvon Martin, who was, his life was taken during NBA All-Star Weekend, you know, earlier this decade. And so part of our NBA All-Star podcast will involve the story of Trayvon Martin. But we will get to that down the road. In coming back to, you know, different content that we're privy to, we've got some other, you know, we're adding some other little just tidbits to the show for your hearing pleasure, because we think you might be interested. Maybe you'll follow up on some of our recommendations. So our Lit Recs, our literary recommendations, is a piece by The Undefeated. Shout out to The Undefeated again for their journalism. But there's a piece about the forgotten history of Puma, because Puma's coming back in the game. You know, Jay-Z is spearheading the charge there with some young talent being brought on board. Even, you know, Boogie Cousins, we mentioned, signed up with Puma. So, but the forgotten history of Puma, you know, at a time, there was a time when Isaiah Thomas was rocking Pumas, winning NBA championships. There was a time when there were slam dunk participants in the NBA All-Star Weekend who are rocking Pumas. And so if you're interested in the forgotten history of Puma, we definitely recommend that. We had a little film session, a little 30 for 30 of Deion's double play, when we talk about dual sport athletes. And it's the story of when Deion Sanders was playing for the Atlanta Falcons and Atlanta Braves concurrently. And it was during the time when the Braves were in the NLCS and facing the Pittsburgh Pirates, who had Barry Bonds on their team at the time. And it was about Deion playing multiple sports in a 24-hour span. Never had been done before, and probably will never be done again. But you hear Deion's take about it, his back and forth with the management and ownership of the Atlanta Braves, and ultimately how would you call it? Confrontation, so to speak, with McCarver. But so we definitely recommend that little film session there if you're interested. And to end this episode out, we're rounding it out, you know, just trying to make it short and sweet. We know you got things to do. And let's see, where are we at here though with time? We're still going strong. No, see, this is why we recorded on GarageBand, because we got logged out of Anchor, but it's okay. We understand. A lot of moving parts on this show, but we will update Anchor with this latest episode once we fulfill it and upload the episode. But we're going out on this date in history. Buster Douglas knocked out a previously undefeated Mike Tyson in Tokyo in the 10th round, and it's widely considered one of the biggest upsets in boxing history. So thank you for joining Nacho Average Sports. It's been a pleasure to be with you on episode 9, and we'll come back for another one in due time. Much love, stay warm, and we'll see you soon. Peace.